The hour that packs a punch. It's Reese on the radio on WTIC News Talk 1080.
And we're back, and you know what time it is. It's Hollywood News. Normally I would go to the movies for Hollywood News, but it turns out that my Apple subscription got me the Hollywood News today. And I did the god-awful thing. And it's funny when you're just, you're lying in bed, you want to watch a movie, wife and I are just chilling out. And we're like, hey, let's find a movie to watch. I'm like, okay, so I figure I'm going to go to my little website where I can, you know, find any latest movies. And I'm going through, you know, Apple TV and seeing what latest movies are out. Maybe we can get them. And I see it. I was like, oh, wait a minute. The new Spike Lee joint is out. Not that I would ever run to a Spike Lee joint. Although he did do one film that was about the World War II. About World War II. I thought that was actually a pretty good movie. Very troubling film. Anyway, I remember that. That was actually pretty good. But this is the fifth movie with Denzel Washington and Spike Lee. I can't remember all of them, but I know there was an Inside Job. I know there was Malcolm X. I know there was Mo Better Blues. I can't think of the other ones that were on there. But this, again, the fifth movie out of all of them. Maybe somebody can tell me what one of them was. But this one is the highest to the lowest. And I watched it. And it's supposed to be about Denzel Washington as a washed-up music mogul. Very, I don't know, P. Diddy-esque. There was a degree of that. But only in the sense of, you know, he's a music mogul. Not that he had any scandal with him, but apparently he was from the streets. When we get back, I'll tell you exactly how awful this was. I feel bad that it was this bad. We'll talk about it. Let's get another check of traffic and weather. Mark Christopher is in the UPS traffic. Hey, Mark.
Oh, hold still. This is only going to hurt a little.
It's Reese on the radio.
On News Talk 1080 WTIC.
Yeah, we're back. Anyway, as I was saying about the highest to lowest film with Denzel Washington, it was straight and absolute trash. Garbage. That's all I can say. It was a waste of time. We had checked out very, very early. There was nothing worth watching this thing. Denzel Washington, the last great movie I watched him in was The Equalizer 3. I don't know why he did this, why he would. I don't even know what I was watching or what I was supposed, what message Spike Lee was trying to send in this film. It was an absolute joke, and no one's talking about it. So I just wanted to mention it was garbage, and that's it. So moving on. Let's get to this Malcolm X thing. Malcolm X, Martin Luther King thing. I want to get to this because this is important. And where this is going to go in the next couple of weeks when this documentary comes out is going to be a really, really big discussion. Because it takes the veil off of so many people, especially Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And there is a lot of accusations in this documentary and in other publications. And I would suggest if you really want to go down that rabbit hole, you should. Because a lot of what we're seeing today has come from the past, and it all is rooted in Marxism, in cultural Marxism. And it starts here with Booker T. Washington and W.E.B. Du Bois. I believe his last name is pronounced Du Bois, but they say Du Bois. And the two of those men were very influential in the 19th century. And Booker T. Washington, who I've come to respect as I've gotten older, was a guy who believed, you know, Up From Slavery, which was his book, talks about how newfound Americanism in slaves who were free could utilize their talents to become a part of the fabric of America. And this was being shouted down by the likes of W.E.B. Du Bois, who was the figurehead of the NAACP. And in his role as the leader or the figurehead of the NAACP, was to consistently and overwhelmingly endure and burden black lives with the idea that they were less than and needed white folks to survive. But not by begging for it, by demanding it, by constantly going over the theme of what they had, how they had wronged them. Right? It was sort of like this pressure system of, this is what you did to us and this is what you owed us. That was his theme. Just went on and on and on over time. And there were many of the intellectuals who were a part of the faction of W.E.B. Du Bois who considered Booker T. Washington to be an Uncle Tom, even though he was teaching blacks to become entrepreneurs, to fend for themselves, to learn trades. He was inspiring black men in the South to move north and buy property, which they did. And this led to what? This led to what was called the Harlem Renaissance. If you look at a book, which is what, Chad Jackson talks about, he talks about this book, which is 100 years of Harlem. Talks about a century of Harlem, and it goes through what Harlem looked like at the Harlem Renaissance to where it was after the Civil Rights Movement. And it all goes to hell. And according to him, according to Jackson, what he's suggesting here is that when we started to see the urban decay was during the Civil Rights Movement when folks like Black Lives Matter leaders, not Black Lives Matter, I apologize, the Black Panther Movement, and, of course, the Civil Rights Movement started telling blacks that everything that they had wasn't worth anything because it did not include whiteness. What does that mean? Let me give you an ugly example that people ignore. The boycott of the bus system, the story of Rosa Parks. One of the jokes that people say that, did you know that Rosa Parks had a car? Yes, of course. Yes, of course she did. Her family had a car. But this story was important because what Martin Luther King was using was to integrate the bus system in Alabama. To integrate it, that whites needed to let blacks sit in the front of the bus. And this was something that everyone had to focus on. In spite of the fact that blacks already had their own bus system. That they could ride anywhere on the bus. Now many people would argue, but you're just self-segregating. Well, that was a fabric of slavery. But after the Emancipation Proclamation, many blacks flourished. They started businesses. They owned farms. They had neighborhoods. They built houses. They lived and took care of their own and got college degrees and went to school and educated themselves. Booker T. Washington is an example of that. He was funded by plenty of people in the North. By the way, if you ever read his book, you will know that there were people, white folks, in the North who would send Booker T. Washington money so that he could establish the school. That he would teach young black men to, and black women, to fend for themselves. And he was so successful that people bought land when he moved up North. But Du Bois and the NAACP, they wanted turmoil. While they were being funded every year since their inception, never did they use that money to do the things that Booker T. Washington did. It was used to advocate for other things, and promote themselves. Sound familiar? Has the NAACP done anything for the black communities they claim to champion? No. Have they started any job programs? Have they created any businesses? No. They get donations every day, every year from major corporations. They line their pockets while they provide nothing for the communities that they serve. Why? Probably because you need a problem in order to have a solution, right? Or a so-called solution. We'll keep the problem going so that we can keep collecting the money. It's a grift. It always will be. It's a grift. They continue to get more and more money. They hold all of these great, great events. But no one gets richer, wealthier, or prosperous, and they never save a life. They're not made to. And that went on for Booker T. Washington to W.E.B. Du Bois. Same thing with Dr. Martin Luther King and Malcolm X. What was Malcolm X talking about? He was saying we didn't need the white liberal. We didn't need white folks to give us our own. We needed to establish our own. We needed to have our own. We used to have that. And I'll even go one step further. I made this big argument not too long ago. I remember when we had to have the Soul Train Music Awards, the BET Awards, the NAACP Image Awards. We needed to have this black award and that black award. Why? Because the big argument was, we ain't gonna wait for the white folks to give us our accolades. We ain't gonna wait for the white folks to give us our flowers. We gonna make our own. And we'll celebrate ourselves. But then some people came around and said that that was self-segregation. And so what did they do? They then flipped it to start extorting those organizations, telling them that we needed to ban them and boycott them until they gave us what we wanted. They changed the rules, made sure that you accepted black, introduced black, encouraged black, become black practically, in order for you to assuage your guilt. That's what the whole Great Society was. Lyndon B. Johnson was just worried about votes, but those so-called black leaders, they were choosing like, wow, if I could get government to move on this, I could get everybody to move on this. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. says, hey, if I could get the government to give us what we want, imagine what we can't do. And that's all that's about. And the next thing you know, everything that black families built, all the wealth, all the prosperity that all of them built, all of a sudden goes down the drain. Their way of life, absolutely topsy-turvy. From a 26% single household, single parent household rate to a 78% single parent household rate. All of that happening at the turn of the civil rights era. As soon as the grievance industry began, things got worse. I was watching every one of these videos, watching all of these people, these communities, these black neighborhoods, flourishing, these people walking around in suits and hats and driving cars, kids going to church, going to camp, being a part of the Boy Scouts, black neighborhoods, one in particular, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Remember that? Garrison and Pine. That's where the Gap Band gets its name from. You know, drop the bomb on me, huh? Burn rubber on me, remember all that? Yeah. The Gap Band, Garrison and Pine. That's where Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street existed. Do you notice the story they don't tell you about after that so-called massacre or race riot? Do you know what they don't tell you? Is that that happened in, what, 1921? And then people started to get videos of 1925 in Tulsa, Oklahoma, of Black Wall Street. And they were looking at this videotape of 1925 after the massacre, and it was weird. Because the entire community had been rebuilt. And guess who was there? No white folks. Black folks. And the video shows them happy, going to church, going to school, walking through the neighborhood as Boy Scouts carrying the American flag. After the so-called white racist massacre. I watched the video yesterday. It blew my mind. I was like, wait a minute, I thought that place wasn't it was rebuilt. And it was rebuilt, and it just had the same pride and standard it did before the massacre, so-called. But everybody was lied to. And everyone tried to bury that tape. Instead of celebrating the fact that those folks rebuilt, they buried it. Why would they do that? Because they wanted to sow animosity. That's all they wanted. Guess what I found out about Tulsa, about that town, Garrison and Pine. What ended it? When Lyndon Baines Johnson decided to put highways straight through the town, destroying 1,000 homes. And I looked up every one of the politicians that were responsible for that road, that highway going right through the town. I didn't find one Republican. Not one. From the mayor to city council to the state rep, the people who decided to destroy that town in the 50s, run a highway straight through it, and destroy 1,000 homes, Democrats. That's the reason why the town looks the way it did today, it does today. They rebuilt it and still destroyed it for a highway. I have some audio, and I'm going to play it tomorrow. I'm just going to wait until tomorrow. I'm going to play the Jackie O audio, where she talks about Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Audio you may not have heard before. And I'm also going to play some very, very inspiring audio from a man who is trying to warn people about the NAACP and W.E.B. Du Bois, the man who actually recorded or the recording of him. He died very, very soon after. Many people thought it was a conspiracy that he had been murdered, but he died in a car accident days after. But I'll play that for you tomorrow. When we come back, more news, more views. We'll wrap the show up when we return.
The Odyssey app lets you jump back to the moments you missed from WTIC News Talk 1080. Download the free Odyssey app, search WTIC News Talk 1080, and tap earlier today to get started.
All right, make sure you download the Odyssey app today if you haven't, so you can always check out the podcast at Reese on the Radio right there in the Odyssey app, and you can check out the show. What had happened was, at the opening show, we broke down the Connecticut families who live in poverty in the state. It looks like, according to a report by the group called ALICE, which is Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed, says that you have to come up with at least $9,568 a month in order to survive in Connecticut. And that means that a family of four people have to make that amount of money. So it means that each parent in a two-income household would have to pull in $4,784 a month. That's how much that it would cost in order for them to survive. Also, stupidest thing I read today, there are reports that gangs in Chicago are warning the president not to bring the National Guard or expect all-out war. Talked about that a little bit. Also, we talked about The Day, the publication, as the editor-in-chief, who is Azakum Larranieta. I'm pronouncing that poorly. I know I am. She is standing by her decision to fire a columnist on in their publication, Dave Collins, after his back and forth with Representative Greg Howard. And we read that letter. So go to Odyssey app, download the Odyssey app, and check out the show for the things that you missed. Also, I gave my very, very limited review of Highest to Lowest, the Spike Lee movie that was not worth even reviewing. And I did. I have to make a correction. Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. That's the Gap Band. I always forget for some other reason Greenwood. I always say Glenwood. It's Greenwood. Thank you. For the folks at the Green Party Elders Caucus, and congratulations to them, because who would have thunk the Green Party would be listening to Reese on the Radio? Not that I think those people are, you know, they're environmentalist folks. And, you know, I've had my arguments with the likes of those people. And, you know, God bless them. I know they want to save the earth. I know they have good intentions. Now, how dare I criticize their intentions? Sure, they want to save the world. One Prius at a time. Thank you, Green Party. I'm ribbing you. Somebody's going to tell me what I think they're going to tell me in a little bit about who the Green Party of, what is it? Green Party Elders Caucus. Why are they the Elders Caucus? What does that even mean? Does that mean that they're older? I don't know. I've never even heard of them before. Thank you for the correction. I appreciate it. When we come back, we'll take some phone calls. We'll wrap this puppy up. Make sure, and I'll tell you what we're going to do tomorrow on the program. We've got a lot of stuff to get into this week, so stay tuned. All right, Mark Christopher, he's in the BPS Traffic Center getting you home. Mark, how's it going out there?
What's up, everybody?
You know who it is.
You know who it is.
You know who it is.
It's Reese on the Radio. Frederick Douglass of the 21st century.
It's WTIC News Talk 1080.
Yeah, it's time for us to get a body here, but before we do, let's take some phone calls and wrap this puppy up. Tim is in Hamden. Hello, Tim.
Why, hi, Reese. I was born in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Didn't learn about the 1921 Tulsa race riot till after. They certainly didn't ever teach anything like that local history. Greenwood, Archer, and Pine, which is, the name of the band, but that's also a downtown area. It's essentially, a area that has, had at the time three or four story buildings and everything else. This was a tremendous, loss. They were literally bombed by an airplane with people dropping incendiary devices and everything. 200 or 300
people. It was rebuilt, right?
No, not really. No,
hold on. Tell me not really. What do you mean by how much? Give me a percentage, Tim. Give me a percentage of what was rebuilt after the bombing. Because I know the numbers. So tell me what was rebuilt. How much was the percentage of it? Was it 50?
The downtown building area.
All of what was incinerated, that was part of the riot, how much of it was rebuilt in 1925?
In 1925?
Yes, because
4 years later,
I've
after
seen
the
video from he was a reverend in the area, and he videotapes the entire town. He's a reverend, and he's, in essence, pretty much, showing what life is like in that region, and he videotapes his church and many of his congregants and the neighborhood. It's all on video. You've never seen it before. I have, because I watched it. And the first thing that ran through my mind was, wait a minute, the Tulsa Massacre, as it's alleged, was in 1921. This video is from 1925.
Wait, Tulsa Massacre alleged?
Alleged massacre. I'm not saying that the race riot didn't happen. I'm using the word massacre as alleged.
My family worked with.
Tim, let's forget about all of that. I'm asking you a question. How much percentage?
You just want to go buy it. You just want to.
How much of it was rebuilt?
Look, the Tulsa World was the newspaper my family worked for.
Again,
they reported on that. To begin with.
Okay, so was it rebuilt or not?
A lot of it was rebuilt.
How much?
This was black. I don't know. I would like to see.
The exact number is 78% of the community was rebuilt. The exact number.
Well, you mentioned before about 1,000 houses.
Let's go one step further.
Destroyed, and I was like,
let's go one step further. Let's go one step further. When it was rebuilt.
Yeah, black people had insurance. They could rebuild. Yeah.
Okay. Well, hold on. We were under the impression that during those times that black folks were redlined and couldn't either get insurance or bank loans.
Look, it was downtown. You crossed the tracks. You were in the black part of town, okay?
But wait a minute. This was Black Wall Street, and it was rebuilt, yes or no? It didn't become White Wall Street.
Absolutely.
Okay, so the blacks were able – hold on. So the blacks in the community – were able to come out of that massacre, okay? We're talking about a massacre, which is in essence a massacre as it's defined, is an elimination of people. But those people got back together and they rebuilt the community some 3-4 years later, and they are on videotape smiling and flourishing and celebrating the American flag.
They were very, you know, I don't know the exact number of people who were killed in the massacre. I know that the stories are that 300 bodies were dumped in the Arkansas River.
And that is alleged. You know, again, there's never been a confirmation of the amount of people who died. Never.
So I don't know. There are a lot of people that, you know, want to, you know, if you pardon the expression, whitewash, you know, the entire massacre.
See, here's the thing. This is the part that always makes me laugh about this whole argument about thing. So guess what? It can be assumed that the white man and the CIA and the devils in Washington infiltrated the inner city with drugs, crimes, prostitute, and guns. We are supposed to take that on its face. But we are not supposed to believe that there would be a group of people who would inject the idea that the Tulsa, Oklahoma massacre may have been false, may have been fabricated. Right?
Oh, my God.
Wait. We can assume. Remember, we're supposed to believe 300 people died, but you can't name them. Why can't you?
So,
the conspiracy
Give me the link to the video. I'd like to watch it.
Tim, I'd be happy to, because I'm going to feature it on the show, and we're going to get Chad Johnson on the show. Here's my problem. What I'm saying is that when it comes to the folklore that does the obvious, right, says that the black people were victims and the black people had this happen to them and the black people had this happen to them, when that folklore is actually established, everyone is supposed to agree with it. And if you challenge it, you're an Uncle Tom sellout Negro.
I asked the question, is there a likelihood?
What if there's a likelihood that the things that we're being told are the truth, are actual false? Because remember, we can inject anything into this conversation, and after we investigated, it turned out to be a lie. So, if it's supposed to be alleged that the CIA is infiltrating the inner city with drugs and guns,
you're getting off on a wild-ass thing. There is a group in Tulsa that you can speak with them, you know, concerning this. If you want to allege to their face, you know, that they've made up something or that nothing happened and stuff. I've seen certainly the film and footage of, you know, that entire section of town being on fire. And
I saw a section of town on fire as well. I watched that video.
Okay. You know,
did you see the entire city on fire?
The entire city.
I didn't see the entire city. I watched the video. Did you see the entire city on fire? You didn't. I know.
If you don't understand that this is not the downtown Tulsa area,
then what
this
was
is
it?
A separate area. This is the black. It was a segregated area. It wasn't downtown Tulsa where the oil people and stuff
but
were.
But wait a minute. This again, a when you ask, area. Listen, when you ask every scholar on whether or not, and every black historian, if Black Wall Street, specifically Black Wall Street, was it rebuilt? The answer is not kind of. It is yes. So my argument is this, right? When you have a rebuilding of that and you have a community, which again, if you're thinking about this from the level of which we were taught, right, when it was finally revealed and what happened, and people see that story and they go, oh my God, that's awful. Whatever happened to that community? And then you find out they rebuild it and their resolve in there and their reverence for America is shown on film. Boy Scouts walking through the neighborhoods carrying the American flag. They didn't come out on the other side bitter at America, calling it bigoted and racist.
They were very proud, but wait, hold on, stop, Tim.
You have to answer one question for me, Tim. Answer one question for me. These folks were lynched in a sense, right? Their whole community, everything they built was absolutely destroyed.
Shot.
They told us, America, let them die. They said America watched them die. They were culpable in watching them die. Why did they
come out of Tulsa, essentially, did this.
Why did they come out on the other side? But wait a minute, why did they come out on the other side stronger?
Stronger.
Yeah.
I don't know who's puffing that up. You know,
okay, let's go one step further. How's L.A. doing since the riots? How's South Central Los Angeles doing? Wait a minute. How is South Central doing post the riots? Is it doing better?
You know, is it doing better?
How about Watts?
I don't know. I can't speak to, you know, that sort of stuff. But the businesses, the doctors, the attorneys, everybody else in that sort of stuff, it was not the same as it was before the 21 riot and stuff. And then you said something about 1,000 houses were destroyed by Johnson. It's like, okay, the move.
They ran
right
a
out
highway through the town.
I know. I've been there. I live there.
You know, okay, so why did they build a highway? For a town that is important to black history, why did Democrats, local and national, run a highway through it and destroy it? Why?
They didn't run a highway through it to destroy it. They built on roads and transportation, absolutely.
Yeah, they claimed eminent domain into a historic black community 25 years after it was destroyed. 25 years after it was destroyed, after they rebuilt it, Democrats came in and ran a highway through it.
Oh, boy, I love it. Well, the Democratic Party, you know, controlled the area, you know, for a long time until the Republicans took over in the 70s and the stuff. I know the local, you know, politics of that time. They built like a lot of, including Hartford and other places. They divide the city. Hartford is essentially divided.
Black on one side, white on the other side. Tim, it's okay for you to just concede that they destroyed something they should have preserved. That's all. It's okay to say that.
No, right? It's okay to say that. You know, it wasn't rebuilt like it was before,
but it was
and it
rebuilt.
Should have done it a lot more.
Yeah,
you know, so,
what would that have mattered? Because they were going to build a highway straight through the town anyway.
Not to the area of Greenwood, Archer, and Pine. That area is still down there. You know, the buildings and stuff. They filmed.
Well, at least they kept
some movies and stuff. They filmed movies down there, including.
Okay.
You know,
least they kept part of it, okay? At least they kept part of it.
Okay. Well, I'd love to see somebody spin, you know, something that was with, you know, false pride into their region. The people down there were very proud. They didn't have any place else to go.
Yeah.
Who would take them?
I know.
Come on, good grief. Have a wonderful night. Bye-bye.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you. I love this whole thing. The argument in the chat room is Dixiecrats, not Democrats. They are one and the same. See, this is that stupid spin. There's no such thing as a separation. They're all the same. Orville Favis, was he a Dixiecrat? If he was, that again would make Bill Clinton a Dixiecrat. Was Al Gore Sr. a Dixiecrat? Well, that would make Al Gore Jr. a Dixiecrat. Was Robert Byrd, who also filibustered the Civil Rights Act with Al Gore Sr., was he a Dixiecrat? Well, he was a Democrat through and through. He survived the 21st century. And he was a Grand Kliegel. What are you talking about, Dixiecrats? It's a distinction without a difference. Just get used to it. That's who they are. I think the thing that you're trying to do, if I may address it, what you're trying to do in the chat room is this. You are trying to distance yourself from your obvious mistake. And that is you're trying not to be aligned with the party that is of slavery, that is of Jim Crow, that is of the Trail of Tears, that is of Andrew Jackson. You cannot be Dixiecrats and Democrats. You can't. You can't be both. You are. Because I would say this. This is what I'll say to you. Just go on the website for the Democrat Party. It establishes itself as the oldest political party in America. And if there is a difference between the Dixiecrats and the Democrats, that means that the Republican Party is the oldest political party in America. Because The Republican Party started in 1854. If you are suggesting that the Dixiecrats and the Democrats are two different things, that means that they started in the 1950s or 1940s. That would clearly not make them the oldest political party in the history of our United States. When you go on their website, and you can go back in the Wayback Machine, that's what it's called, they reference Andrew Jackson as the beginning of their party. There was no such thing as Dixiecrats, sir. Trying to pull the wool over my eyes is kind of silly, but nice try. I'll take Tom, who's in Hamden now. What's up, Tom? Oh, I can't, Tom. I'm sorry. I don't have time. Damn it. I just realized what the time was. Sorry, guys. Forgive me. That's okay. We're going to talk about this tomorrow. We will. I'll have audio sound bites in the whole nine yards. It's time for me to get up out of here. Damn, it's Monday. As I always say, radio is free, so we thank you for paying attention. Remember to keep JC in your heart and in your mind. Sean Patrick, we love you and we miss you. Remember to panic is not planning, so plan to work. And work to plan for me. I'm reaching the radio. You have a good night. Pleasant tomorrow. Don't you go nowhere. You make sure you come back here at 2 o'clock tomorrow. Mark Christopher. Yeah, he's in the BBS Traffic Center. He's getting you home, Mark. Good night, sir.